Okay, energy levels up. Ooh. We're excited. Oh, good to go. All right. This is the Popmatic Podcast.
The one and only.
The best library-themed pop culture podcast on the internet. Can you name one better? Never mind. Don't answer that. I'm Brian. With me today is...
Amanda.
Crystal.
And Bale.
Lisa is on podcast hiatus. She's going back to school for a while, furthering her education, bettering herself.
Getting smarter.
Enlarging her mind. Apparently that's a better use of an hour on Wednesday afternoons than listening to me scream about Battlestar Galactica. I guess. So, it's September's show. We normally do a back-to-school show in September, but when you go back to school, they make you read things that you don't want to read.
Boo.
Exactly. I know how you feel about this issue.
We don't need no education.
That's right.
So today, we're going to feature our guilty pleasures. Things that we like, and we don't care if they're in good taste. We don't care if those East Coast establishment snobs and their one-name newspapers say about all of whatever. But seriously, when I was a senior... Like, you had to draw a book from a hat, and then you had to write, like, your, like, English thesis about it, you know? And my friend Nicholas, like, this skate punk to the core, he pulls the name out of the hat, and he gets, like, Tess of the Ubervilles, and I'm just like, good luck, buddy. So, our guilty pleasures this September. You know, the theme of the show was going to be library card sign-up month, but I'm like, if you're listening to a library-themed podcast and you don't have a library card, I don't know.
Not a big
there's no hope for you.
There's no hope. Yeah, that's true. There's no hope for you. But if it's one thing that we've all learned working at libraries, people are weird.
It's funny because it's true.
That's an understatement.
Before we get into our guilty pleasures, let me tell you about some of the great things that are happening at the library. September 18th, guess who's coming?
Santa?
Santa's coming? Awesome.
I don't know. You said guess.
So, besides Santa, who's coming?
Molly Ringwald.
Awesome. And she has a new book, and it's actually a fiction book. So it is called When It Happens to You. She's going to be here September 18th. We're super excited. You know, when celebrities write books and they come to the library, it's a huge party, and all kinds of people show up, and it's a good time. So that is very exciting. And what else big program happens all through September?
Concerts in the Courtyard.
Concerts in the Courtyard happen every Tuesday. All sorts of artists. Check the website for who's coming. It's every Tuesday in September. The first one so far was the Wanna Beatles and 700 people in the Courtyard. That broke a record. This program is amazing, taking off. So.
And you can bring your lunch.
Yes, you can bring your lunch. And you know what else? We got this new thing where the logo for Concerts in the Courtyard, you can come and, like, put your head in the logo, like at the old, like, Coney Island deal, you know? And then you get your picture taken, and then it'll get posted on the library website, and then you can download the picture later. Is that cool or what?
You can show all your friends on Facebook.
That's gnarly, I mean... So, Bill, what's your guilty pleasure?
Okay, my guilty pleasure is a novel written by Sidney Sheldon called A Stranger in the Mirror. I'll briefly tell the plot summary. It's a love story of sorts between Toby Temple and Jill Castle, and the backdrop is the world of show business. The story is fast-paced, tale of fictitious showbiz types, power-hungry characters, backstabbing, revenge, and oh yes, the story is liberally peppered with sex. I read A Stranger in the Mirror over 20 years ago, and the reason is a total mystery. Maybe because Sidney Sheldon, the author of the book, was the creator of I Dream of Jeannie, a popular television show in the late 60s that I liked when I was growing up. He also was a screenwriter for a Cary Grant movie called The Bachelor and the Bobby Soxer, which is very funny, and he won the Academy Award for. He also wrote and directed the Buster Keaton story, and in doing research, I found he was also a successful playwright. But still, I don't know why I read it. But I did enjoy it. However, I should mention that I've never read another Sidney Sheldon book. It was not like reading Elmore Leonard or Raymond Chandler or Michael Crichton. After I read one, I had to read another one of his books. Do you realize Sidney Sheldon was the 8th best-selling writer of all time? Some writers have a talent for writing about their time. Sidney Sheldon had a gift for writing about what the public wanted. And that's a talent. Crystal, what's your guilty pleasure?
Well, I'm going to preface this by saying I suffer from insomnia quite a bit. And when I wake up in the middle of the night and I can't get back to sleep, I don't mind so much when I have my guilty pleasure, and that is a romance novel. Now, you may be rolling your eyes at me like some of my fellow podcasters.
Not me.
But everybody needs to escape from life's burdens once in a while. And romance novels always supply that happily ever after that cruelly evades us in real life. I read historical romance novels. One of my favorites is In for a Penny by Rose Lerner. In for a Penny has a fresh and witty take on the marriage of convenience plot. In a nutshell, a heavily in debt lord marries a wealthy commoner for her money. They both find love in 300 pages. You can find more about the author Rose Lerner at roselerner.com. Another of my more recent favorites I'd like to recommend is Trial by Desire by Courtney Milan. Who says feminists can't be featured in romance novels? The heroine in Trial by Desire uses her wealth and resources to save battered women. You can find out more about Courtney and her books at CourtneyMilan.com. And we'll link to these sites in the show notes. Another website you might enjoy if you like romance novels is smartbitchestrashybooks.com.
I like that one too.
Which is described as all of the romance, none of the bullshit. It's moderated by Sarah Wendell and Candy Tan. Sarah and Candy also wrote a book about romance novels I highly recommend, Beyond Heaving Bosoms, The Smart Bitch's Guide to Romance Novels.
Which we have here at Nashville Public Library.
We do. We have one remaining copy. So NPL's romance collection includes something for everyone, not just the people that like bodice rippers. We've got Christian romances, erotic love stories, gay and lesbian romances, and romances written by and about African-American women and men, including writer Brenda Jackson, who was just awarded the Romance Writers Association Lifetime Achievement Award. And remember, you can always read romances on your e-reader like I do, and no one will know the difference. So, Amanda, what are you guilty about?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that I'm very happy that you read romances, too, because sometimes I feel like I'm the odd man out on this podcast, because I would be interested to know how many romances Brian has read.
He used to wear a pin that said romance friendly.
He did, but it has gone by the wayside.
I don't read a lot of genre fiction. When I do, it's usually science fiction. But I want to say that you and I, Amanda, have made a deal that I would read a romance novel of your choice and discuss it on the podcast.
And
you have not called me on it yet.
Yeah, I haven't. Not yet.
My only caveat was that it wasn't really super long.
Yeah.
Like
outlined.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was my example. I was not an outline.
Because that's when the discussion first began.
Yes.
So.
And in defense of romance novels, I've always heard people say that if they're harder to write than other genre fiction because, like, to actually get the sort of sexual tension or emotional tension, like, you actually have to be able to write good. Like, if you can't, then it's not going to work, right? You have to be able to make the characters.
True.
You know?
So, anyway, so, yeah, I was happy about that. But my guilty pleasure, like, since this is kind of the pseudo anti-back-to-school podcast. My mom always used to tell me when I was in school that I can't have TV on while I was doing my homework, and it never seemed to slow me down any. But so my guilty pleasure is actually on TV. I watch a lot of the Food Network. Sometimes I just kind of like to have it on. I watch, you know, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, or Triple D, as it's known to those of us in the in crowd. I like Chopped. I like Iron Chef. I like
Cupcake Wars.
I do watch Cupcake Wars. I feel like there's somebody I'm leaving out that is very sad, but it's just nice to have on. Oh, Restaurant Impossible, that's the other one I like that's really big right now. It's just kind of, you know, it's not going to change your life. I probably wouldn't eat most of the food that they serve, but It's just, I like the process, like the preparing of the food and watching how these chefs that have studied their, you know, their whole lives to, it's another form of art, basically. And since you can't check out the Food Network at the library, we do have a new book out by a Food Network chef called Yes Chef by Marcus Samuelson. He is a fairly regular judge on Chopped, which is Ted Allen's show. And he actually won the, Marcus Samuelson won the Top Chef Masters two or three seasons ago. He has a very interesting story. He, for lack of a better term, is black. He's not American, so I can't call him African-American. He's actually Ethiopian. He was born in Ethiopia, and his mom and older sister, and he all had tuberculosis when he was like two or three, and his mom managed to get them, you know, 60 miles away or like a far distance away to get to the hospital, and she ended up, you know, passing away. And then he and his sister were adopted by this Swedish couple, the Samuelsons, and so then they moved to Gothenburg, Sweden, I think. So he has this wide palate range, so it's a very interesting story, and I was always interested about how a black guy was from Sweden. And he just actually opened up a restaurant in called the Red Rooster in Harlem that's kind of like combines American soul food and Swedish soul food and a little bit of Africa, and I'd be very interested to go there. He had a special on it on the Food Network a while ago, just kind of how he's trying to help revitalize Harlem and kind of bring it back to its glory days. Yes Chef is the book, Food Network is the network. That's my guilty pleasure. Brian, what you got?
I just want to say I'm really glad that you came up with something, because I know that you have a I read whatever I want to all the time anyway policy.
I pretty much do, yeah.
You, I mean, that's pretty much your baseline.
That's where,
right?
I start.
So I was like, I wonder, I actually thought, like, I wonder if she's going to flip it up and be like, oh, I'm going to talk about
something
that I didn't want to read, but I read anyway. It ended up being pretty good. But so, yeah. So Yes Chef was actually, it cracked the bestseller list for a while.
Yeah.
So.
And it's pretty new. I mean, it's only like 2 months
Still new. It's pretty good. So I'm going to go back to Africa. So I'm going to go to South Africa.
Well, worked out
nicely. My guilty pleasure is the rap group Die Antwoord, who, which is Afrikaans for the answer. And they usually describe themselves as a rave rap group because they typically kind of rap over like techno beats. And they rap in English and Afrikaans and Hausa, right, which is the Bantu language. And probably the most famous Hausa speaker in the world is Nelson Mandela. I probably butchered the click. I mean, so like if you're from South Africa and you know, leave it in the comments. So they really came to international attention with their really striking, horrible videos, which are like really sort of fun to look at, but also like politically incorrect and evil, like all at the same time, and corny, and like what that, like WTF when you see their videos. And their lyrics are the same. I mean, they're really politically incorrect and they say bad things. And that's how I like my hip hop, actually. But not just my hip hop, but I think all my art, it just has to be edgy. For me, everything I consume just has to have like a little bit of an edge. Now, it's funny, like the reason I think they're a guilty pleasure is like I don't think that their songs are really that good. But if I'm going to listen to pop music, I probably want something that has a little teeth. And I can remember too when they first hit it big, basically through their really awesome videos, or at least visually striking videos. You know, I hated them, and it was just like, because everyone was like, "Is this for real? Like, are these people just joking?" I just hated it. Even people that liked it because they thought it was ironic, I didn't like it at all. I mean, I was just like, this is just garbage. I don't care about this. This guy can't rap. So the thing that really flipped it for me was when their second album came out, their label Interscope wanted them to change the single or change their lyrics because they're like, oh, listen, we're not putting out this stuff with all these words that you can't say in America as the single. And Die Antwoord said, screw you, Interscope. We'll just leave your label. We don't care. And I thought that was awesome, right? And so after that, I mean, I guess I started paying attention more just because I like that they did that. And one of the things that sparked, though, this controversy was about all their kind of lyrics, where it started this conversation about, like, well, what do you say in lyrics that are bad, and what does that mean? And then it brought in all this racial stuff, too, because they're white. They're from South Africa, but they're white. And I mean, they say all this stuff, all these words that they got from American hip-hop music, you know, all these American words from hip-hop music. And I just thought it created some really good dialogues about language and censorship and things we choose to endorse or not endorse. Because, you know, if someone like Lil Wayne or Eminem or Lady Gaga, right, they say exactly the same words in their songs all the time, and record labels don't care. They would never try to censor them at all. And all those, I mentioned those three artists in particular because I think those are three artists that have made a career out of saying, like, controversial, bad things, like, on purpose, and also have these personas that people are like, well, you just, you know, your persona isn't the real you, and they've sort of made a career out of that, so I like that. Though I think Lil Wayne would probably punch me if I said his persona wasn't the real me. So I've been listening to them. I think, too, that as far as, like, the techno thing, if I have a weakness for, like, throwaway pop music, it is techno. I mean, I would go there and listen to techno music. So I think that appeals to me a little more, that this sort of, like, rave music, you know, that they're rapping over. But then what's funny is, in my head, the first song off their second record, Tension, the one that they told Interscope to go for a walk on, which the library has and you can check out, is Never Li Nikise Mise. Oh, I messed that up. It's Afrikaans. I can't say it, right? But the very first song is, like, there's this choir and it's chanting, and then it gets into this really big synth tone that, like, pinch shifts down, and Ninja, like, one of the rappers in the group says, "I'm indestructible, gangsta number one."
I'm indestructible, gangsta number one.
And that's in my head all the time, like when I walk out of our workroom to, like, the service desk, and I just, like, am just, like, supremely confident thinking in my head, I'm indestructible, gangsta number one. You know, everyone that walks by the desk, if you're listening, you can just laugh at me because I'm just a librarian walking from his cubicle to the service desk and be like, yeah, you're here's your hold for your DVD. So, Diane Antwoord, that's all I got.
Their influences in American hip-hop, or do they have?
You know what? I really don't know. I know that they have a YouTube channel with, like, they favorite some hip-hop artists that, I mean, I wouldn't say. In this weird kind of thing, I mean, I really don't think that they're that good at rappers, even though it's better than the first record that I've heard. So, better than Danny Brown that we've listened to recently and not enjoyed, who also, like, has a filthy, horrible mouth, right? And, like, I know Crystal and I both listened to the new Danny Brown record and we're like, this isn't very good. It's definitely better than that, but it's not as good as Lil Wayne. So, I mean, I would say, I mean, the way that they're typically, because it's techno, it's really pounding, they have that sort of rap real fast, Eminem kind of thing. It's not, like, slow. So, like, just, like, try to spit out as many words as possible. So.
So, October at the library is also known as Arttober. And yes, I know this is September's podcast, but my Arttober project is more than just a one-day project. So I've been working on it. And in order to work on it, I've needed to get, like, I've wanted quotes. And so I found this really cool page on Goodreads, goodreads.com. I don't know, 3 out of the 4 of us here are Goodreads people. And we're probably friends with each other, so that's nice. But if you go on Goodreads, they have a page of quotations that you can, you know, read and enjoy, and they've got them tagged. You know, there's a humor section and a love section and inspirational and wisdom and fantasy, and there's probably one about cherry tomatoes if you look hard enough. But if you scroll through, and kind of what hit me, I was looking through it, and Michael Phelps, after winning 9,000 gold medals at the Olympics, had the quote, Dr. Seuss quote, "Don't cry because it's over, smile because it happened." And it happened to be at the top of the page of quotes because probably, you know, everybody saw him say that and then they all liked it on Goodreads and, you know, the 4 of us that are members that actually watch the Olympics. So I was kind of scrolling down just to see what the quotes are. And you can actually sign up for a daily email that they'll send you a quote every day. And some days they're really cool and some days it's like the author's birthday and so they pick a quote from that author. And some days they're just really cool. They kind of have been slow lately, but One of them I found was the Apple Inc., and I think this is from the commercial that says the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who actually do, which I liked. Very inspirational and motivation. Brian has his crazy South African rappers in his head, and I like something a little bit more calm and peaceful to fire me up in the morning.
Hey, nothing's inspirational as I'm indestructible, gangster number one.
That's true. It is the new Rocky theme.
And the rest of that song goes beep, 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 beep. Stuff in Afrikaans that's probably beep, beep if it was
English.
Yeah, there.
So rock on. So the best quote, and this was just a random one of their day quotes, was from G.K. Chesterton, Alarms and Discussions. Sorry, I can't read my writing. And the quote is, "Poets have been mysteriously silent on the subject of cheese." And I leave you with that thought. So, Crystal, what is tickling your fancy?
So, while Crystal's working out her giggles, a lot of the quotes on Goodreads are submitted by Goodreads members, right? When they read a book, you can add a quote and tag it the way you want. So, like, if you're reading some poet and have a lot to say about, I think you said cherry tomatoes. Like, if they tag it cherry tomatoes, right, there'll be quotes about cherry tomatoes. And that's actually what one of the things I like about Goodreads is if you can add your own quotes and then you can remember quotes and it's sort of stored somewhere online, because if I'm gangster number one, and if I write something down on a piece of paper, it's going to go away.
Well, I added one, but I'm so far the only person that has liked it. So apparently it's too far down on the list to get to get some play. But that's okay. Well, it's a process.
All right. I think I'm over my giggles. So if you've listened to our podcast for any length of time, you know that I listen to a lot of other podcasts, and I've discovered yet another one that I'm a fan of. It's called The Dinner Party. And you can find it at publicradio.org/dinnerparty download, or you can search in iTunes. So The Dinner Party, it's an hour-long celebration of culture, food, and conversation designed to help you dazzle your friends at this weekend's get-together. It's hosted by Rico Galliano and Brendan Francis Newman. In every episode, you'll hear a joke, you'll bone up on an odd bit of history, and then wash it down with a themed cocktail. They usually feature an artist of note. It could be a filmmaker, a writer, a comic. A recent episode featured Rashida Jones talking about her new movie, and LeVar Burton of Reading Rainbow and Geordi from Star Trek fame. He was answering etiquette questions. So it's a great podcast to listen to when you're exercising or cleaning or whatever, just to learn random bits of trivia to impress your friends and influence people.
Okay, I want to know what the best joke is.
It's usually the icebreaker at the very beginning of the podcast, and I'm not really a joke rememberer kind of person, so I can't.
You just have to listen to the podcast.
You just have to listen to it to find out.
But so does it tell you how to make the cocktail?
It does. Yeah. And then if you go to their website, all of the recipes for the cocktails are listed. And the cocktail is usually inspired by, they feature a This Week in History. Like a couple episodes ago was the guy who came up with the idea for an escalator. Which never made it off the ground because this was a hand crank kind of escalator, which didn't
work. That
would
take some effort.
But then the mixologist from a bar, I forget where it was, came up with a cocktail that this person would have enjoyed. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. Bill, what is tickling your fancy?
I always have commentary. Speaking of LeVar Burton, all Reading Rainbow episodes are now on YouTube. If you didn't know that, go for it. It is really fun. Sorry, I'm a librarian.
Okay. And LeVar Burton is now on a cable show. I can't remember. But he has a gig. So.
Well, I have another question, too. So why is he answering etiquette
questions? They just feature a celebrity answering etiquette questions.
So it doesn't. He wasn't like on as an etiquette expert.
He's like the new Emily Post. a couple episodes ago, Cheryl Strayed was answering etiquette questions. She was on there talking about Wild, but she actually has like a Dear Abby kind of column that's featured somewhere. I can't remember. But sorry, Bill. Back to what's tickling your fancy.
Well, tickling my fancy is the Kraft Suspense Theater. And this is an anthology series that was telecast from 1963 to 1965. The nice thing about this, it's not on DVD. However, if you go to YouTube and type in Kraft Suspense Theater episodes, you will hit the mother lode. Each episode runs about 45 minutes long, and it's perfect for a lunch break viewing. I highly recommend it. And just to give you a little backstory of how I discovered it, this also plugs an upcoming interview I've got with a director by the name of Elliot Silverstein. And I went on YouTube just to see if I could find any interviews. Sometimes they'll have interviews with directors or things, but here I found the Kraft Suspense Theater episodes that he directed. And the one I've watched of his was, and it's a good one to start, Are There Any More Out There Like You? And it had in it Robert Ryan and great favorite actor of mine, and Catherine Ross. And so for me, making this type of discovery, it was like discovering King Tut's tomb, because I've read about the Kraft Suspense Theater. I always wanted to see it. And you'll see a lot of great actors in just these 45-minute anthology television show, everybody from Lee Marvin to Ben Gazzara to Jenna Rollins. So I highly recommend it. Oh, it's kind of interesting. If you look at them in the lower right-hand corner, it has sci-fi. And so obviously whoever posted these were being shown on the Sci-Fi Channel at one time. And this was back when sci-fi just started, because they don't use this logo anymore. Now they spell it differently, too. S-Y-F-Y. Uh-huh. And this is the old sci-fi.
Charlatans.
It has nothing to do with it, but whoever uploaded those, I'm grateful, because I've really been enjoying them. And I can't believe the good people at Kraft took that off to put on the Kraft Hour with Perry Como. The most boring man. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but they used to make fun of him on SCTV as this insomniac sleeper who would just sit, and he would have dancing girls. It was really funny. He would be barely singing. But anyway, I digress. And Brian, what's tickling your fancy?
Well, I just want to add that Animaniacs did the same. Like, he was the secret weapon in this one plot and this one cartoon they had, that, like, they opened up a box and it was just him singing, and like all the bad guys fell asleep.
Yeah.
So they won.
Yeah. Nice.
That's actually the perfect segue, because I'm going to talk about a man who sits and then people dance around him too. So it's kind of perfect. So my guilty pleasure, just continuing the theme, and what's tickling my fancy now, both at the same time, right, is the TV show So You Think You Could Dance. And it is reality television. Everyone says, I'm a snob, I only read these other books or whatever, I only hard, whatever, man. So You Think You Could Dance, I love this show. And what it is, it's a dance competition show like American Idol. And there's starts out with 20 people, and then they get voted off, and you have to vote for the people that you like. So why is it a guilty pleasure? For one thing, all the contestants are 18 to 22, and they're in spandex 90% of the time. And they got dancer bodies. It's look, it's 20 of the hottest people you ever saw. And look, they can do backflips and gyrate in ways you never thought were possible. Wow. And then the other reason that it's a guilty pleasure is, much like Di Antwoord, the hosts on the show are just so strange and bizarre.
Cat Dealey is strange.
Oh, I'm gonna go all Perez Hilton on her, but then I'll back off a little later, because I do really do love the show. But I'm gonna get mean for a second, a little snarky. So the producer of the show is Nigel Lithgow, and he's actually the host of the show, and he's also the producer of American Idol. This is the dance version of American Idol. So he produces American Idol, and So You Think You Can Dance. He's this evil stereotype of a smarmy British television producer. He always wears a beige colored jacket and a light pastel tie with a really big double Windsor knot, and he has blonde hair and really large chemically whitened teeth, and he's one of the judges, and occasionally sometimes he's really supportive and fun, and other times he says really politically incorrect things, like sexist things or like ethnic jokes, and it's always just like, oh, sorry, I'm rich and I'm a producer in British and I didn't know I wasn't allowed to say that. And it's actually sort of like almost like your drunk uncle, or like you meet some really powerful senator and it's like, did that senator just fart? Like, I'm like, what? Like, I can't believe the senator would do that. So here's this guy, he looks real classy, he says this stuff that's weird. And the other part, like...
Mary.
All right, Crystal likes the show too. So the other permanent host is Mary Murphy, right? She's the ballroom dance expert, and she's like, I mean, she's sort of this like drunk plastic surgery disaster. She's like this like kids like inflatable toy that's like out in the sun for too long,
and then he's gonna get me.
And then like sometimes they bring her in, and then she screams on command, like so like. I mean, I guess she's kind of like the Paula Abdul role in that she usually says positive things, but not. But when she gets really excited, she gets really overexcited and screams, you know? And it's just like, wow, man, you need another Xanax. I don't get it. You know, like, she seems just a little tipsy sometimes. Now, the other permanent member is Kat Dealey, who's the host. It's sort of the So You Think You Could Dance equivalent of Ryan Seacrest. And she's sort of like Gumby and Paris Hilton, like, put together. She's, like, really, really tall and, like, blonde. And what's interesting about her is she's, like, it's like, crooked nose, you know, like this really beautiful model, and then you hit her in the face with a cricket bat. Now, I just want to say, I'm tall and have a crooked nose, but in an ugly sort of prison kind of way. Like, hers actually, it makes her actually really kind of, like, unique and good looking. But one of the other, like, guilty pleasures of the show is they always put her in the most, like, terrible, outrageous dresses that are just like, what is that? I just, like, are you pranking her? So I go back to the Nigel character, right? I think it is sort of a pose. He's the producer of all these shows, and he's really powerful. And I think that he's like, I'm going to make you wear this horrible dress, and what are you going to do about it? Like, this is like this is a beautiful woman, this like statuesque woman, someone that's so pretty that you can be on TV and just stand there and smile. That's your job, right? And he puts her in the ugliest clothes. I just can't imagine. And then, see, now that I'm going, Mary left the show for a while, and I thought it was maybe, you know, because she was like, you know, needed to go into rehab or maybe have some more work done. But now I realize maybe she was just really mad at Nigel for being a jerk. But it's, you know, I'm not sure. So I apologize. I love your show. This is why it's not a guilty pleasure, because it's one of the few shows I've watched that have actually moved me because the dancing is so beautiful. Like, the people on the show are so incredibly talented. I'm just like, I don't even know. Like, you know, I've been brought to tears by the dances. I've been flabbergasted. It's just like, wow, this is like really incredibly good. And when I watch American Idol, I'm just like, you're horrible. Why are you on TV?
You want to punch them all.
Yes. I want to, it's just like, how did you, it's like, I mean, sometimes So You Think You Dance, they indulge in the, oh, you have a sad story, you know what I mean? But other times, you know, it's really about the dancing and whether or not you can dance good. And I just, it's like, what other reality show is there that actually leads to art on TV? Like, maybe, Project Runway, but not as much. I mean, this show has been consistently good for a number of years. And then you also get to meet, how it works is every time for a specific routine or a specific week, choreographers work with the dancers, so you get to learn different choreographers. And I'm sure that there are many, many choreographers out in the world. And So You Think You Can Dance only hires, like, 10 of the choreographers that exist, but you actually get to learn about different choreographers and who they are. And I don't really see that happening anywhere else in popular culture. The show's on Fox, it's really popular, and like people always talk about how like dance is dying. And like here on this show, you can actually see people dancing and learn about the choreographers and learn about how hard it is. I mean, it's like a service to the arts. I think it's great. So I'm watching it on Hulu. So it's actually like 4 weeks back. So if you're a water cooler kind of person, or if this is your water cooler show in your office, you have to watch it. It's on Fox right now. So by the time this podcast posts, you'll be right in the middle of season 9. And but if you want to catch it on YouTube, you can start watching it right now. It's just like, you know, 4 weeks back, and that's cool with me. What else was there to say about So You Think You Can Dance?
What night does it air?
Oh, that wasn't my question, but...
I think it's on Wednesdays on Fox, okay. If you want to watch it.
I was just going to say, do they do, like, all kinds of dance, or is it all, like, the hip-hop, pop and lock? I use terms I'm not really familiar with.
What were you going to say, Crystal?
Oh, no, go ahead. That's your...
I just talked for 10 minutes. What were you going to say?
No, yeah, all kinds of dance are featured. And then the contestants, I mean, they all come from different backgrounds. I mean, some of them have been classically trained for years. Mm-hmm. And some of them are just incredibly naturally talented, like hip-hop dancers, mm-hmm. whatever. And then they work with the choreographers, and hopefully they'll move on to the next level.
One of the awesome things about the show that's so fun to watch is the people when they have to dance outside of their style. Mm. Like, because it's just
That would be cool.
How good are you going to be? And also, I mean, I know because, like, most, I think, you know, dance is not that popular, and this show has, like, a really large audience. A lot of the people don't know anything about dance, and every year they're, like, 1, 2, 3, like, hip-hop b-boys, like, break dance, pop and lock animator guys who just are just crazy, but they're all self-taught, like, in the mirror or with their dance troupe. And then they get on there, and I think seeing how good they will do is, like, always one of the big narrative mm-hmm. arcs of the story. And another thing that's just a treat for viewers is that if the judges think they do crappy, they have to dance for their life at the end of the show. So what you get is a solo by one of these hip-hop guys who are, like, just ninjas. Like, I don't even know. I mean, it's just, like, how did you learn to do that on your own? Like, it's just, they're so amazing. So, and then they get voted to stay because what they did on their own, like in their own style, when they pick their own music and choreograph their own dance, is just so freaking awesome. Like, what would Mary Murphy say? I'm on the hot tamale train! That's what she would say if she gets rough and says that. I'm a hardcore So You Think You Can Dance fan. So,
I see that.
But do you really like it?
I have been away from the show for a number of years because it is on season 9, and I did think it kind of got repetitive the way reality TV shows can, and they kind of do little things to tweak the formula, but it never works. But after, like, not watching it for a while and now, like, sort of dabbling back into YouTube, I'm like, man, I love it, you know. Nigel's my mean, snobby uncle, and there's all these naked children dancing. It's wonderful. Now everyone's going to go check it out and be like, this show sucks. What is this? This is horrible.
Can't wait for dancing. Yeah,
but don't forget about Craft Suspense Theater.
Yes, you can hop right over from So You Can Think You Dance to Craft Suspense Theater.
You got
the
dual screen, you can have them at the same time. I'm not cool like that.
And the Dinner Party Podcast. And
there's probably a dance quote somewhere in Goodreads.
And Goodreads Quote Machine. Weekly emails every month, every week.
Daily.
Daily emails of
daily.
Quotes? Oh, uh-huh. That's awesome. You thought you had to do work at work? You can read Goodreads quotes.
Goodreads quotes. Sometimes it's even J.K. Rowling. Harry Potter. Right there in your inbox.
Speaking of J.K. Rowling, her new book, Podcast Listener, is on order. So if you want to get on that holds list at the library,
I can't remember what it's called, but I have a hold on it.
Me too.
Maybe you want to commit right now to do a podcast discussion of that book on the spot. Bill's like, heck no.
I'm just trying to think how far down the list I was. I'm probably not towards the top.
I just got Gone Girl.
this pop culture podcast is kind of like watching a show on YouTube that's 4 weeks behind.
We're pretty close. It's the same decade.
You've been listening to the
Potmatic Podcast.
And if you want more info, what you can do is...
Well, go to Google and type in Nashville Public Library.
Or, if you have that type A library personality, you can type
www.library.nashville.org.
All right.
Crystal,
yes.
What's your guilt?
What am I guilty about?
Okay. Like, no, the grand larceny. I steal my neighbor's mail.